Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for one of my best friends and a guy I haven't talked to for quite a while because he's so busy running around the world, Keith Bliss. Vice President of Katona Company, but you more know him on, you see him on Fox Business, you see him on CNBC, you see him all over the world. Keith, what's up, my brother?
Hello, Bubba. Good to be back with you again. It has been too long. You and I are both too busy.
Yeah, no, it has been busy. And, you know, Keith, I see you all the time, and I hear you talking about markets. And, you know, one of the things I find refreshing about the way that you discuss markets and the way you talk about markets is you do it very matter-of-factly, and there's never a, no matter what the markets are doing, there's never a hint of an emotional answer from you when they ask you about what's going on. You're basically, this is the way things go and this is the way things happen. So what are you thinking now about the overall markets? I mean, are we fully valued? Is there a correction coming in your mind, or are we going to just continue on the same path? What are you seeing here?
Well, given all that we're dealing with, both fundamentally, when I look at the financial world, and then also what I see in the economic world and the political world, I think we actually will continue to grind sideways here until we get a little bit more clarity on a number of items out there. So fundamentally, it's always about company earnings and what they're saying going forward. The first quarter earnings are starting to roll in. They should be fairly good according to what the companies have been guiding us towards over the last couple of quarters. And then the global macro picture is, again, continues to look like it's improving, but you're always going to have blips and blemishes out there, whether you're looking at Europe or China, Latin America. The U.S. Seems to be, if you take the pessimist view on the global economy, the U.S. continues to look like the best house in a bad neighborhood. I don't think anybody's really thrilled with 1.5 to 2% growth here in the U.S. or globally. And then on the political side of things, what the markets are dealing with and kind of waiting with are not only President Trump's agenda items getting put in on the speed with which he said they would during the campaign, or what they said they would in the first few days of his presidency, but also now we've got flare-ups with North Korea. We just dropped the Moab bomb on a tunnel complex in eastern Afghanistan, dealing with Syria, Russia, Iran, those thorny issues don't go away. So I think when you add it all up and strip out the emotion behind all those things, I just see the markets continuing to trend sideways. A lot of people forget, Devin, this trading is, the many decades that you have. A lot of people forget that when you have markets riding at the high point, you've really got to have a substantial catalyst to keep pushing them forward and break out to new highs. And I just don't, of those three major areas, fundamental global macroeconomics and the political scene, I just don't see anything that's going to break them out, nor do I see anything that puts the markets in real jeopardy of a big sell-off here. And the markets are poised inside of the quantitative models that I look at and have discussed with you several times. We're neither overbought nor oversold, tending slightly to be oversold, but nothing dramatic. And if I were to lay a bet right now, I would say the markets will clear out some of this clutter that we dealt with in the past week, and the equity markets will start to move back a little bit higher, but again, nothing that will break them out to all-time highs.
Now, I believe that, we're pretty much, I think everything good that Trump talked about has been priced into the market, 4% growth, which is a joke to begin with. I mean, I don't know how anybody, a Steve Forbes and a Steve Moore, all these guys say we're going to get 4% growth this year. I mean, I don't know where they're going to find it at. Okay. But yeah. The tax cuts, the healthcare, I mean, unfortunately, I wrote about this a long time ago that I love Trump as the president. I just think that he'll do, you know, again, I like the business side of it. You know, you can have your pluses or minuses about what you think about him, but I like the business end of it. But I knew that he was going to have a lot of trouble dealing with even his own people in the Senate and in the House, because, you know, these guys are, you know, greedy guys looking for out for themselves. They don't really give a crap about anything else. Do you think he's going to be able to get some of these things through? Because obviously his plans are very good. But the real problem is going to come down to, can he get his the things he needs through the House and through the Senate, and can we actually get back to real work instead of this continued battle of nonsense?
You know, I think from the headline, if you will, of the things that he wants to do, so repeal and replace Obamacare, we saw the failure on the first attempt there, but that's still an agenda item. You see that starting to circulate back. With some of the ideas that are floating out there. So that's the first one. Then tax reform, of course, is the second one. And the third big one is infrastructure spending. Everybody agrees. Everybody in the world agrees that those three things need to happen. The issue is going to be, and I'll get back to the point that you just made, which I totally agree with, about the entrenched idiocy inside of Washington, D.C. But I think the point is going to come in, has the market priced in those changes along those three major points? Has the market priced in the level with which those changes will happen? So what is the new healthcare law going to look like? What stays, what goes? What's the real impact to the economy? What are the savings that we're going to enjoy? Is it going to be better for everybody? Will people have more money in their pocket that they can then go spend on stuff to keep the economy humming? Tax cuts and tax reform, what is that going to look like, especially on the corporate level? It's doubtful, just given the structural problems that we have inside of our own economy, that he's going to get it down to a 15% corporate tax rate. That's just the fact of the matter. It may phase into 15% over a longer period of time, but going from a 35 to 15% tax rate, you know, with the stroke of a pen, is unlikely at this point in time. And then the infrastructure spending. You know, the estimates are all over the map on what this country needs. I don't know about out in your neck of the woods in Illinois, but if you were to drive around here in New Jersey, it's actually in several streets, especially where I live, it's like driving in Beirut in 1985. There's so many potholes. Looks like a minefield you're driving through. So everybody agrees that we're going to have to spend a lot of money on infrastructure. That obviously will give a boost to the economy. Steve Forbes and the other guys, I agree with you, are absolutely dreaming on 4%. That's not going to happen unless you completely mortgage the future and run our debt to $30 trillion, the counted debt to $30 trillion, which I don't think is going to happen. But that's where, back to the initial point, those three things I believe are going to happen. It's the speed with which they get through. It's the level with which they get through that the market's going to have to contend with. And the point that you made earlier that I'm in total agreement with, the problem in Washington and the reason why the people elected Donald Trump is that Democrats or Republicans, those people that have been sitting in Washington for decades, are so entrenched, and they're what they do down there and what they're trying to do is protect their own jobs. Which is really awful to see. I'm glad the American people finally woke up to that notion, and I wish we would vote some of those clowns out. That's what really needs to happen. So when Donald Trump talks about draining the swamp, he's talking about both sides, and that's why he's getting pushback on his agenda items, which may, of course, impact the timing with which he gets done, because make no mistake, both Democrats and Republicans are trying to make him look bad in his presidency. So I think if the White House can seize the narrative and the agenda and talk to the American people about not only this is why they elected Donald Trump, and of course we know not everybody voted for Donald Trump for a variety of reasons, but this is why he got elected president, was to make these reforms, make these changes, and if they can seize the narrative back from those entrenched interests in Congress right now, then I think you'll be able to get them put through it at good levels. But if anybody, again, back to
the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horvitz, we're going to step out of here for a break. We'll be right back with more from Keith Bliss after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horvitz, coming right back after the break.
Wake up, man.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Keith Bliss, a superstar with all different kinds of projects, but best known as on Fox as the guy with always the calm head, no matter what Liz Claman is doing. Keith is always calm and laying it out as it is. And of course, he's the vice president of Katonin Company. So we talked about, you know, the Washington and the problem there, the swamp. And of course, you know, one of the statistics out of Washington is that out of the seven richest counties or areas in the world, five of them are in Washington, D.C., which doesn't make a lot of sense considering what their economic structure is overall there. And of course, that's where, you know, these are not the right words, but you'll put it more eloquently. But the politicians are still stealing all the money. And you know, it's just how do we get them, besides voting them out, how do we get some real change that actually puts the country back on real track instead of these, you know, lousy jobs, too many entitlement programs, and where they actually have to live on a real budget like you and I do?
Well, it requires, in my opinion, it requires real structural reform and change in how our government, how our elected government is formed all the time. A lot of people forget that, and this became clear in the general election last year. A lot of people make the mistake and think that we live in a democracy. We don't live in a democracy. We live in a constitutional republic. And what that means is we use our democratic right to vote for somebody who represents us at the federal level inside of the republic. So the only way you're going to make substantial change and disgorge all the wealthy bureaucrats and plutocrats that have now infested the swamp is to vote them out. The other way to do it, which would require almost a mission of like Atlas raising the earth, would to be imposed term limits on the senators and the representatives that are in there. It makes zero sense to me that you've got a bunch of congressmen, a bunch of representatives that have been down there for over 40 years. That makes zero sense. That was not the intention of our founding fathers. They did not put term limits into the Constitution for the representatives because the society at that time was not very educated, and they knew that they needed that genius cluster of men who wrote the Constitution, informed the country and the government, knew that they would have to come back every now and then and act as representatives inside of the government. But they were really gentlemen farmers. They were business people. They were landowners, plantation owners, and they had to go work their job, and they would come back and represent the government and work in that regard. We've lost our way on that for a variety of reasons over our society. And what you get as a result is you get a system that, again, in my opinion, does not work. It enriches the people that are down there through the various relationships and deals that are cut, the constituent groups. And I think you find a representative government that really doesn't represent the interest of the broader American people. And you have particularly the representatives who are elected every 2 years. They get to Washington, and I've seen this firsthand. 60-70% of their daily lives are spent raising money so that they can run for re-election in 2 years. Doesn't make any sense. So I've had this conversation with a number of lobbyists, a couple of politicians, a bunch of people. The responses are always different and interesting, but the one thing that people always point back to is that, well, if we had term limits, we would have no experience in Washington. And I always say, great. Why not? I'm sure you've got the bureaucrats down there who know how to run things, but you need to get new elected officials, fresh blood, like Todd Horowitz or Keith Bliss down there with different ideas about how things need to do. And then you would get people who actually would represent their constituency and do the right thing, as opposed to worrying about some special interest group that's going to give them $1 million for their next reelection. So until the people take back the ability to change their elected officials or force the issue to impose term limits on those elected officials, I fear you're never going to have anything different down there.
Well, no, I couldn't agree more, because I just see a total disaster because again, there's too many tricky laws that you have to understand how you, even those guys who raise money. I mean, there's guys who run for president. I'm not going to name any names, but they don't really want to run for president. They just want to fill up their campaign coffers because they get to spend that money in a certain way as well. They can use it for certain things.
Right.
And to me, that's just ridiculous that we have to go through this on a regular basis because, you know, you and I have to live by a budget. Right. You at home, you have to, you know, you can only spend so much money. You can't keep borrowing or keep printing money on your own. You have to sit there and say, OK, I've got my expenses are $10,000 a month. I've got to live within that $10,000 a month. And I know that I've got my youngest son going to college in 3 years. So now I'm going to need, you know, $12,000 a month or $15,000 a month. I've got to account for that. And the problem here is we never account for anything because they continue to use the ability to create more money and just continue to go deeper in the hole. How do we solve that problem?
You got to stop spending, you know, just like you and I do, you're pointing it out perfectly. The federal government is a giant vampire squid, which not only continues to suck money out, but also uses capital inefficiently. And you can look throughout history, when you have governments that become such a large part of the economy, that's an inefficient use of the capital that's in the world right now. And it really stymies growth, which is why in large measure, there's lots of reasons, but one of the main reasons why we're at 2% growth maximum here in the U.S. And it also takes away capital from proper investment at the company level, investing in not only working capital for a company, but also investing in human capital and creating jobs. So that's one of the problems. It has to come to an end. You can't possibly mortgage the future the way that we've been doing. Although, if you read some of the studies, there's a large debate on when it actually does come to an end. It comes down to a supply and demand question for me. As long as there's enough demand for the supply of debt that the United States keeps creating, then it's not an issue. But we're sitting at just the stated debt. Forget about the intangible debt of the entitlement programs, just the tangible debt of the government balance sheet. We're now sitting at 108% of our annual GDP. That in and of itself, if you were to work the math and look at the debt service on that, is not that big of a problem yet. It does become a problem if interest rates kick up substantially. And it does become a problem because Americans, by and large, are not big holders of their national debt. By contrast, Japan's debt load is 220% of their GDP. The reason they can get away with that is that a large majority of their population are actually the lenders to the government. So they use their own savings to buy Japanese debt. They're all in it the same way, so it's not that big of a problem. But to your initial question, how do you stop it? You have to take not a scalpel, but rather a meat cleaver to a lot of the ways the U.S. government spends money. And that also is a subject of great debate because, back to my original point, there's such an entrenched large part of our overall economy. If you start taking a meat cleaver to the expense side of the government ledger, you've got real economic problems at that point in time. You take away an entity which is the largest piece of demand inside of the economy. So, but you've got to start somewhere. And I think where you really need to start looking at are the government entitlement programs, you know, which will impact you and me in a few years for sure. Both on healthcare as well as Social Security will impact our children many decades from now, but you just have to do it. They're totally unsustainable. So somebody has to have the courage and the smarts to really look at those. And then I think you have to look at all the other wasteful spending programs that are inside of the government for nonsensical things to pay off special interest groups and other constituent groups for votes that really don't impact our lives in a great way and don't do anything. And you have to do this without risking our security, which is probably at greatest risk of any time in our history. So listen, I don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers, but somebody, one of our elected officials has to have the courage to step up and really start looking at this situation hard. And maybe that's Donald Trump, because he doesn't have a special interest behind it.
Right. They have to grow his set. This is the Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz. We're going to come back after the break with more from my man, Keith Bliss, Katonin Company, but Fox Business. You get to see him all the time. Very, very smart. We'll be right back with more of the Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back.
You're so delicious.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd, Bubba Horowitz with Keith Bliss, Katonin Company. Also, man, you see all over the media, always calm, always cool, always wearing those nice ties. So, Keith, I know you've been doing some new stuff, and you know, you're in a bunch of ventures now, and you're doing some capital raises, and I think it's really exciting what you're doing. Fill me in. What's going on? What are you doing?
Well, yeah, so about a year and a half ago, give you a quick background. About a year and a half ago, while I was still doing my equity and option trading thing and working with institutional clients to discuss markets and other things of that nature, got invited to a transaction by a couple of friends of mine. I have several friends that have worked in venture and private equity, some out in Silicon Valley, most of them in New York. Got invited into a Series D raise for a fairly good-sized Korean e-commerce company. And I've known about this world, you know, capital raising, secondary share trading in private companies and late-stage pre-IPO companies, you know, investment banking activities and other things of that nature. But I'd never gotten directly involved in doing that. And so I got invited into that, got to know that world very quickly, got introduced to lots of wealthy investors, whether they're family offices, private banks, sovereign wealth funds, other institutional investors and the like, and just became fascinated with it and saw this as a real opportunity to take the next leg in my own personal career, but also it really was where the action was. A lot of people don't understand that in the capital markets, what you see us do on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, or what you see your friends do on CBO, is really the product that was created from capital formation activities and capital raising activities. And a lot of people also don't realize that the IPOs that you see on the equity markets go off, that is a thin sliver of investment banking activities that go on around the world. Most of those activities are either debt or equity. Capital raise is done on a private nature with private placements and other types of vehicles to get companies the capital they need to grow their businesses, to expand their businesses, to hire more people. And that's the really, that's not only interesting aspect of what I'm doing now, but it also from a human base or societal aspect, it's really interesting and gratifying when you can raise the capital for a company and then they can go out and hire another, you know, 50 to 100 people to grow their business, give people good paying jobs, put money in their pocket so that they can go support their families. That's the really rewarding part of what I do now. So the work that I do now spans across lots of different sleeves. Of course, I'm still involved in the equity markets, as you're pointing out. When I go on TV, I got to know what I'm talking about. So I watch those every day, and I still have lots of clients that trade the market, so I work with them. But what I'm concentrating mostly on now is working with companies, to help them grow their businesses and therefore structure and market transactions for capital raises. And they run all over the board from, small $1 million raises all the way up to, we're working on a transaction right now, which is going to be in excess of $100 million in capital raise that we think. And then everything in between. And then by the same token, working with investors, mostly, wealthy family office structures, private banks, sovereign wealth funds, other institutional investors. But sometimes we work with unaccredited, non-accredited investors through a particular regulatory type of capital raise called Reg A Plus, which, by the way, is a product that was formed from one of the very few things that I think the Obama administration did right, which was the Jobs Act in 2012. So anyway, we do everything in between, and it's the deals and transactions are interesting. They're frustrating at times because this is very chunky types of transactions, which take a long time to structure, bring to market, and then find the right investor to put capital into. But again, I think the most rewarding aspect of it when you do complete a transaction is not that you've married up some investor with some company looking for capital, but it's that company's taking that capital and expanding their business, and that means creating more jobs.
And of course, that is, in my opinion, that is the biggest problem in this country today is the lack of jobs. Because you can talk, Obama can brag all he wants about the jobs that he created, even the new jobs that, of course, last employment number was pretty bad. But I mean, overall, the jobs that are being created are not good jobs, and that's one of the problems that I think needs to be handled, is to bring back real jobs to this country. And enough of the service jobs, enough of the minimum wage jobs, because with what that has. Nobody can afford to do anything because everything else is too damn expensive, and the wages just can't keep up with the need, and that takes away from all of these companies that we're trying to support, because nobody's making enough money anymore, and I think that's really a much bigger problem. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree with all that, and that's a very complicated topic that you just raised, about creating more good-paying, wage-paying jobs here in the country across several different industries, not just manufacturing, not just technology, not just what we see going on with companies like Snap or Uber or Airbnb, even though those companies have created a lot of jobs. But what you're pointing out is correct. So if we look at the job growth, over the last 8 years, a very large majority of it has been in service-based employment, which doesn't really pay a very good wage. And those jobs tend to be transient. They tend to be short-lived in a lot of ways. And you just can't run an economy based on a lot of people making, $12 to $15 an hour, no matter what you set the minimum wage at. So the real structural changes that need to happen are again, around tax reform, are around the way companies have access to capital to grow their business. And then one of the other big structural things is a continual re-education of the workforce in this country and other countries to continually evolve with the changing landscape of what our jobs are going to be into the future. Everybody wants to build everything that we use in our daily lives, whether it's a computer, a desk, the chair I'm sitting in, the car we drive, the shovel that we use. Everybody wants to build that inside of the United States. That's just simply not feasible at this point in time, nor will it be in the future. We just don't have the manpower to do it. We just don't have all the raw materials and the manufacturing facilities to do it. But you can start to bring a bunch of those jobs and activities back, which give workers of all stripes a living wage, proper benefits, the ability to put food on their table, support their families, maybe send their kids to college if they want to do that, and have a little money left over to actually enjoy life. And we've gotten away with that. And I think that's why you see so many people disgruntled and really you know, searching for the way things used to be, you know, 30 years ago. But we need to your initial point, is the structural reforms that need to be put in place, and they really need to come down from the federal government, which will allow companies to grow businesses here inside of the United States, whatever that growth looks like. Those are the structural forms that really need to happen, and happen quickly. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see a workforce that will struggle to make ends meet longer term. And that's just a recipe for disaster on a society level, in my opinion, going forward.
Oh, no, I agree with you 100%. I mean, again, one of the problems we have here is that there's just no, you know, you take a guy, even if you're paying a guy $20 an hour, if he's not getting benefits, all right, that $20 an hour is worth nothing, because, you know, I mean, your health care is ridiculous. I mean, you know, and again, that's one of the expenses that we all have to pay. And again, if you want to send your kids to college, I mean, you're going through it now. You've got one son in, you know, I've got two in, and the expense to do that, you know, either I fund it or they have to borrow. And of course, one of the major problems we have in this country is too much debt. And, you know, we're in another subprime area now, you know, because, and the difference here, and we'll get this when we get back to the break, but I'm going to set it up, is the difference here today in the debt structure is, at least in the housing bubble, it was bad and everything was overvalued and you had a lot of bad debt, but at least the banks owned the hard asset real estate, which, again, it was expensive, but they own something. Today's debt, half of it is student debt, which is worth zero, and the other half is a depreciating asset in cars. So how are we going to move from that? Because you've got a higher, the debt today is bigger than it was in the bubble of 08. But we're going to step out here. Of course, that debt is going to mount, and it is going to create another meltdown with all of the ridiculous ways that we recapitalize and we allow the banks to do everything. And these are things that are, I think, unbelievably important. But we're going to step out of here for a break. We are with my man, Keith Bliss from Catone & Company, but also you see him on Fox, you see him on CNBC, and he's now doing a bunch of capital raise and really doing some great stuff. But in the meantime, if you miss a show, or even if you don't miss the show, you should download it every day. Anyways, you go to libertytalk.fm, and you can download the Bubba Show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And, of course, our brand new hit sensation, Bubba's Bottom Line, available to you at bubbatrading.com. Check it out as we get ready to move in and start with our new hedging and futures classes. The Bubba Show Top Bubba Horns will be right back with more from Keith Bliss after the break. The Bubba Show Top Bubba Horns.
After 10,000 beers.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with my new curtain rod hanger, Keith Bliss. Keith Bliss from Catone & Company. And actually, and doing a lot of capital raise and really, really a smart guy. That's why we got him, because he educates me. I have to have my dictionary with me. But so, Keith, you know, I talked about all this debt. Now, this debt is not going to go away. And this is going to create a bigger problem, in my opinion. What are your thoughts?
Without question, because whether it's auto debt, but more importantly, student loan debt, this is the real ticking time bomb in our country right now. I agree with you 100%. If you get in a situation where people are never able to get out from under the thumb of their debt, if they're always working for the man, so to speak, if they've always got an obligation, again, that's capital that they're using inefficiently. It's not capital that can be used to grow our economy. All it's doing is repaying debt. And what the lenders do with the money that they get repaid is they just continue to repurpose that payment and lend it out to somebody else. I think one of the noble gestures that we've had in our country in the last 50 years is the notion that anybody who wants to go to college can go to college. That's wonderful from a society standpoint. We all agreed, myself included, and I went to college back in the 80s, we all agreed that that would be beneficial to our economy. The problem that we got into, though, is that's beneficial to the economy if everybody's coming out with degrees that can actually do things for the economy, whether it allows you to build stuff or, you know, build bridges or boats or ships or buildings, allows you to work in the financial markets and help raise capital for, like I do, for companies to go build stuff. But that wasn't the case. So everybody who wanted to go to college could go to college. And I think we have to be, as a society, we have to be honest with ourselves. Not everybody's, you know, made for college. You just don't have to go to it. But those who wanted to go to college did. And in most cases, they went to college by taking out student loans. And now we have over $1 trillion in student loan debt that everybody's looking at each other wondering how we're going to pay it off. You heard a little bit about student loan debt in the tail end of the Obama administration, where they were floating ideas about the government taking it off everybody's hands to free them from the yoke to go out and build things. That's a terrible idea, in my opinion, for lots and lots of reasons. But most importantly, from a personal level, is why should somebody who took on a lot of debt to go to college get a break, where I'm funding my son's own college out of my own pocket? And, you know, like you are, what do you say to people like you and me in that regard? But it also sends the wrong signal. Excuse me, it sends the wrong signal from people who just wantonly take out a lot of debt. You're basically telling them that they're going to get a free pass forever in their life. And that's just not reality, as you and I know. If you have an obligation, you got to pay it back. Otherwise, you have really bad punitive consequences as a result. But the issue as it stands right now, and you're seeing companies like SoFi, if everybody's seen those commercials on TV, and SoFi is a company that I know because it's one of the so-called unicorn companies that have propped up with really good and interesting business models. You just see companies, and we're going to hear about this for decades, refinancing the debt away, trying to give people the ability to manage their personal cash flow better. And more of that is going to have to happen. And what you're going to see is the transfer of the debt from the government level and the bank level into private investors, which have lots of capital out there, which should be able to help. But if short of that, if we don't see a massive transfer of that debt, the debt holders, we do have a humongous problem going forward. People will default on their student loans. If you're coming out of college with $200,000 in debt, if you finance 4 years at $50,000, it will take you several years, if ever, to pay that off, especially since kids, even with useful degrees, are coming out starting and making only $50,000 to $60,000 a year. It's just, and they have to live. They have to buy food. They have to buy clothes for their job. They probably need a car to get to their job. Maybe they're paying rent either to their mom and dad, or they were able to find a cheap apartment with four of their college buddies. But you have to live. That's the whole point of what we do. It's not to just work and repay every dime that we make to either the mortgage holder or the student loan holder. So it would take several years. And I think the way you stop it is, you stop making it so easy, and as harsh as this may sound, you stop making it so easy for people to take on lots of debt. And I always get asked the question, especially friends of mine, and we're in the same category, where we're sending our second or third kid to school at this point in time. I keep asking the question, like, I can't believe how much colleges charge. How dare they charge that much? And my response is always, well, why do you think they charge as much as they do? And they scratch their heads and they have no idea. And I said, because they can't. as long as we keep paying the colleges what they say they want paid, they're going to keep charging more. And as long as there's lots of money floating around out there in the form of student loan programs, either at the government level or private institutions, the cycle's never going to be broken. So that's one of the things that I think need to be better in our society. We've gotten away from that since I went to school. You know, when I went to school, I went to Rutgers University. My mom and dad sat down with me and they said, this is what we can afford per year to send you to school. Find a school that fits that. And I did. And we've lost that conversation. And you and I have both seen it with kids of that age, where kids will look at 12 to 15 schools and you look at the cost of it and you'll say, okay, I can pay $10,000 a year, but if you want to go to, you know, a school that charges $40,000 a year will take out $30,000 in student loans, blah, blah, blah. It's a perverse way of looking at a project that you're going to spend money on. And until we reverse that perversion a little bit, have the conversation that I had with my oldest son when he was going to college. I said, this is how much money I can spend per year. No more, no less. And you're getting 4 years out of me. And he said, okay. Then he had a benchmark to go with. Until we get back to that point, student loan debt ticking time bomb is going to get larger and larger and larger. And as a society, we'll have to make the decision whether we deal with that as a society or we just let people continue to default on their loans, which, of course, has long-term bad ramifications as well. So that debt is the worst one facing us. Auto debt, other types of debt that run our society are not as bad, but are getting large. And until you change, again, my biggest point is until you change the behavior, both in the supply side of debt and the demand side of debt, it's a problem that will not go away, but only get worse.
All right, we got about a minute left, but I got to ask you this question. So you heard the story about President Jeffrey Locker from Richmond Fed, right? And
yep.
I want to know why that has totally disappeared off the face of the earth. Nobody's talked about it. We haven't heard about it. Nobody cares. And yet what he did, in my opinion, is just as serious as what any of the people that have gone to jail have done.
Because it's a rigged game, Bubba. You and I both know it. You and I do something like that, we go to jail. They do something like that, they get a slap on the wrist and they go away. And he'll have a million-dollar job with either a lobbying firm or an investment bank here in the next 6 months. Mark my words.
No, I agree with that. And that, to me, that just is not right. I mean, you know, Martha Stewart went to jail for less. Ivan Boesky and Michael Milken, all those guys went to jail for things that are less. And here's our institution that's supposed to be watching out for us. And, of course, what do? They give out inside information. And I don't get it. And I don't know why that we cleared it off the newspapers already. But, Keith Bliss, man, it is great to talk to you. I really miss you. And I'm glad that we finally got a chance to talk. And I can't wait to see you in New York in a couple of weeks. I appreciate you coming on.
It's always my pleasure. And, yes, we do need to do this more often.
This is my man, Keith Bliss from Katonin Company, also raising money. Also, you see him on Fox Business, CNBC, and every other major network, because when they run the trouble, they got to run to a guy who's calm and peaceful. Keith Bliss, it's been great. This is The Bubba Show, Top of Horse. Everybody have a great day. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download The Bubba Show every day, as well as The Sporting Edge on the weekend, so you can hear Xander. The Bubba Show, Top of Horse. We'll see you back tomorrow. Everybody have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.